Hello, and welcome to another Vulval Pain Society podcast. I'm Sally Turner, and I'm with Ruth Hallam-Jones from Sheffield and Juliet Grayson from Chepstow in Wales, who are both sex therapists, who came and gave a talk today in London for the London Vulval Pain Support Group. So hello.
Hi. It's good to have been here.
Yes, really interesting talk. Absolutely fantastic. And you outlined a lot of the recent research around sex therapy and vulval pain. Perhaps we could just go through briefly what you outlined in the talk, the main points. Perhaps you'd like to begin by saying, I think at the end you gave a summary of what you, if there was one thing you could ask us to take away with us from this, what that would be.
Yes, it was that I really think that women have the right to expect a really full assessment of a variety of issues, and then they have a right to expect a range of treatment options, and then they need to look at how they carry on living. Mm-hmm. And I think all of those are equally important.
Right. And one of the key points you brought up at the beginning of your talk was about the different stages of arousal for women. You gave us diagrams, which I'm hoping we're going to be able to put up in our file section on the website. Could you just briefly explain again what you were saying there in summary about the different phases? And you were saying it took at least 40 to 45 minutes for a woman to become fully aroused, and a lot of women actually start to have penetrative sex too early in that phase.
Yes, I think we've kind of got into a situation where a lot of women expect to be aroused at the same rate as their partners, and then when they're not aroused at that rate, they go for penetration if they're having penetrative sex far too early. I think it's quite interesting that, for example, gay women are less likely, in my experience, to be presenting with vulval pain issues.
That's interesting.
And I think that may be because there's less pressure time-wise. I don't know. What do you think, Jim?
Yeah, I mean, the vagina, the part of the arousal process is that the vagina balloons and opens and allows entry for the penis, and that whole process can take up to 45 minutes. Now, a lot of women, if they're waiting for that long to have intercourse, will be feeling like they're holding things back, they're the slow one, they'll be embarrassed about it. And that's something that we've got to kind of help women get over and understand, that there's a whole series of things that happens in that arousal process that protects the vagina when the penis is in there, to protect against the buffeting of the penis. Mm. So the ballooning and the you know, it becomes more spongy, the sides become more spongy as they fill with blood, and the
lengthening.
Yeah, the lengthening, the whole thing lengthens so that he's not banging against the cervix at the end.
Right.
So there's a whole process that happens, and if she's not ready, then she's much more likely to have pain.
Right. And you also mentioned, I'm leaning on from that, about lubrication. And you mentioned that there's a protein in the lubrication that kills sort of bugs and looks after the environment. And you mentioned that's alkaline. And you also talked about why some of us get thrush, and can you say a bit more about that process of lubrication, how it happens, and
yes,
what it is?
And I mean, I think what we're trying to suggest is that if it was working effectively and normally, mm-hmm. that our lubricant would protect us from a lot of bugs. Mm-hmm. But that because a lot of women end up having a dryness as
yes.
a problem, they don't have enough natural lubricant to be protecting their own vagina.
Right.
And that, yes, you can artificially have, there's some really good products, and we've been talking about yes today, because that's one of the excellent products that's out at the moment. But I think the reality is that most women need a lubricant anyway.
Right.
That I wouldn't, you know, you're not frigid if you need a lubricant. You're normal.
And how much the lubricants that we might buy, I know you mentioned that KY jelly, complete no-no now. We know more about it. But are most lubricants alkaline then based? Or like the Yes that you mentioned, which is the newer one?
I think you want a pH that's neutral.
Right, because I was going to say thrush actually needs more. I mean, it thrives in alkaline conditions, doesn't it?
Yes.
Thrush, so you need to make it slightly
more
acidic.
You want to make a more. Yeah.
Right.
And I think what you want is a neutral base lubricant that
right.
isn't going to push you one way or the other.
Right.
I think the other bit. Can I backtrack?
Yes,
a bit?
Of course. Yeah.
The other bit was we talked about arousal.
Yes.
And the bit that we didn't manage to talk about was that actually the women may be being orgasmic too early.
Right.
And I know that sounds a bit balmy. But if you've taught yourself to be orgasmic as soon as possible, you can actually have a kind of reflex to orgasm, which occurs before you're fully aroused.
Okay.
So that women may be saying, well, you know, I'm all right because I can be orgasmic. But actually, they're being orgasmic without maybe having the full extent of pleasure they could.
Right. I suppose a lot of women, there's pressure as well these days for women to be sort of multi-orgasmic and have, you know, one orgasm after another. And so perhaps women are sort of chasing that first one, you know, too early and wanting to then go on, you know.
Yeah.
Actually,
because there's a reflex reaction, which is almost like sneezing. It's the reflex, the automatic reflex reaction, which can happen quicker. And then there's the whole body arousal. So it's almost like we've got two arousal systems that ideally get connected and are working together to bring the woman to orgasm.
That brings to mind that old, you know, how years ago there used to be this sense of a clitoral orgasm or a vaginal orgasm. Where do you sort of stand on that now? Presumably that's...
No, I'd much more go with the whole body.
So the whole, there is a slight difference then in an orgasm that happens quite quickly, but then it's a much more intense one that happens if you leave more time to arrive.
I think yes.
Yeah.
If you rush it because you're in a hurry, you may have a very enjoyable short orgasm.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's the same as giving yourself time to.
Right. Okay. And can we just move on to, if you want to summarise, perhaps both of you, how you were talking about testosterone. If there's some way of summing up what you had to say about that.
That unfortunately, there are some women who probably could be helped, but that it's very difficult in the current situation because of the limited system we've got for licensing it, and because women would probably end up having to pay privately for it.
Right.
But if they did go privately, then the Intrinsa patches for women seem to be having very few side effects.
Okay. And can you outline again why it's important for us to have testosterone? Why we might need it and what it might do for the body?
Well, testosterone isn't just to be sexual.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, if you've got a very low level of testosterone, you will have low desire. But you will also be low in interest in anything else.
Mm-hmm.
You may have low interest in your job or the children or your own activities. And I think we need to be looking at women who are tired, mm-hmm. who are lacking in energy, who feel they're not functioning at their best, and making sure that they have a chance to be checked for that.
Right. And you were saying that there is no actual normative level in this country for testosterone levels for women, but in the US they've got some sort of
guide. It's that we haven't done the tests.
Right.
When we did our normative level, we included everybody in it.
I see.
So all the people who had low levels mm-hmm. were included in the normative study.
Okay. And you also mentioned particularly about the pill, that women who've been on the pill for a long time and too much estrogen, that can also have an effect on their testosterone.
What I'm quoting there is Irving Goldstein's mm-hmm. research, which I think is really worth looking at.
Right.
He's got a book called Sexual Pain, which, you know, I would recommend it fully.
Right.
He's certainly put a lot of time into investigating and researching these issues on a level that isn't happening in Britain at the moment.
Right.
So just remind me, Ruth, what's the level below which you reckon a woman would be wise to get possibly treated for testosterone?
Below one.
Below
one. Would probably have an effect.
Okay.
It's difficult because we haven't got a history.
Mm.
We haven't got a confidence, really. But the other way to look at it is if the person has symptoms, that some doctors will prescribe on the symptoms for a 3-month trial and then reassess.
Okay. And we also talked, all of us, we discussed our experiences as well of as women within the medical system. I don't know if you want to say something about that, about how, you know, you're saying how when men go with, you know, penile dysfunction, erection dysfunction, they're then tested for all sorts of other diseases, whereas women seem to get a bit of a raw deal.
We just seem to, at the moment, have a great understanding, an increasingly confident understanding, that for people who've got a sexual problem, that may be a marker for disease later in life. Mm. But we seem to not be looking at whether or not that's true for women. And that feels fairly concerning, that a lot of women may be going to the GP, may either not be being asked about sexual functioning, or may not be being picked up, that they may be somebody who needs investigating further.
Okay. For example, if they're suffering from vaginal dryness, potentially it could be linked to an early onset diabetes.
Okay.
So there are connections that can be made, potentially.
So women need to push for tests, like blood tests,
blood
testosterone
tests. Yes.
Lipid ratio, you know.
Right.
Do my cholesterol, please.
Okay. And you also said something quite interesting about why you felt testosterone isn't being prescribed to women in this country, other than for menopausal women. And you mentioned about, obviously, government and funding for this sort of thing. Can you say something about that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if there isn't any funding, then it's going to be very difficult to try and see in primary care GPs who are able to take those options. And I don't have any answers for that, really. I think we just need to keep fighting for equality here.
Right.
The argument could be said to be the other way when it comes to HRT, in that women get HRT very regularly free on the NHS, whereas men wanting testosterone or something like that may find it very difficult to get that.
Right.
So that there are imbalances in both ways seems unfair.
You were saying about some of the drug companies that they're sort of more geared to dishing out the pill than they would be to actually offering women testosterone patches for particular reasons.
Well, I think it's more that in order to do anything in this country, we need good research.
Yes.
And good research needs funding by the pharmacy companies, which they're highly unlikely to do if we're unlikely to license their product at the end.
Yes. Okay. So just also to sum up, I mean, just before we finish, you mentioned a couple of products that you spoke about today. One was Eros, and also the Yes lubricant. Do you want to just both say something about those and why you recommend them?
The Eros is a small cup device, a vacuum device that fits over the clitoris, and it's not a sex toy as such. What it is, if you like, it's a sex exerciser, in that it sucks blood into the clitoris and into the genital region, and we've had very, very good results with it for improving arousal, improving orgasmic function. So it's a relatively new thing on the market. It's been around for a few years now, but relatively new, and it has been successful in a good number of women.
Okay.
Is there anything more to say about the Eros?
Just that I think it's very sad that it's taken so long to get the message out that there is an effective non-chemical treatment that could be very helpful to women.
And it is available on the NHS for women with certain conditions?
No, it's available if the GPs...
If the GPs...
are willing to prescribe it.
Oh, okay.
Like most of them, there's no budget.
Right.
But if you think about it, diabetic women are the obvious ones who really should be given a chance to try it.
And could a woman come be referred for sex therapy, and can a sex therapist actually prescribe something that then the GP will then...
The sex therapist could certainly offer that as an option.
Okay.
But unless the GP is willing to
do it,
prescribe
right,
it, the woman would have to pay out.
I see. Okay. And just a few words about the Yes lubricant, which, and also about KY jelly, which you explain why you think that's not such a good option anymore.
Well, the Yes lubricant is organic, for a start,
okay.
So there's nothing nasty in it. So in terms of kind of, you know, the chemicals that you're putting on yourself in a very sensitive area, it's very good. And they've got these two two types. One is water-based and one is oil-based. You wouldn't use the oil-based one with a condom, mm-hmm. so you need to be aware of that. But for women who are not using condoms, to use the oil-based one first, and then on top of that, use the water-based one, gives a double glide effect mm-hmm. that can be incredibly helpful for just lubricating and smoothing things along. So yes. so that's a really great combination.
Okay.
And I think to pull that together, what we're saying is we're not saying any one thing causes anything. We're saying this is a really difficult collection of syndromes that are all quite complex, and here are some bits of a jigsaw puzzle that may help fit together to change or move something that's stuck.
Okay. I think obviously to add to that, which we always say at the in the London Vulva Pain Support Group, which is that, you know, before you try anything on your vulva, it's always a good idea to just try it on the back of your wrist or on your hand, because obviously different things work for different people, and we all have reactions to certain things which other people don't have. So, to say that. But thank you very much for joining us. Just in summary, is there anything else that either of you would like to add before we go?
The partner. Mm. I think what we haven't talked about is the needs of the partner, their need for breaking out of their isolation.
Yes.
Their need for support. And their need to feel that they're not the awful bad one who's wanting to do things that cause pain to their partner. Mm. And I think that's a really important thing. But also, there may be issues that the partner's got, sexual problems that the partner's got, that make things worse.
Right.
For the woman.
Yes.
And there may be ways in which they can improve their technique, which could help.
So sex therapy is really about working with a partner on the area.
In an ideal world, it's about working with the couple.
Yes. Yeah,
so you may well do quite a lot with her, but it'd be nice to bring the partner in as well.
But does that mean that you'll still work with women who are single but want to get
Absolutely.
Into a relationship? Yeah,
you'll still
do that. Yeah,
Absolutely.
Okay. Great. Well, we're hoping also to have a future podcast with a partner or partners, so that'll be interesting to lead on from this discussion into that one. But thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.